From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter. Made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. This week, how Edith Piaf, The Little Sparrow, inspires David Ho Choi's choreography, Yelp Indie's new event, and Limestone gets its day in the sun. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today corn dogs and dangerous poetry unite for an upcoming carnival. But first, painter John Klinkos grew up in Indiana, spent some formative years out east, and came back to the Hoosier State a few years ago. Last year, he secured one of the Stutz Artists Association's coveted residencies, and he and fellow Stutz resident Sean Hurley are about to debut their show called Real Surreal. I invited John to tell me about how they came to that theme and what inspires his art. Tell me about why having the artist residency is important to you.
The artist residency has been very important to me just to help me expand my work. So I've always worked in spare rooms out of the back of a house somewhere. And so having a larger space has allowed me to work larger, and has also allowed me to explore my work and focus on my work a little bit better. Anybody who's ever worked out of their house knows that, you know, there's always dishes to be done and laundry and stuff that gets in the way. And when you have a nice studio like the Stutz has provided me, you can focus better.
Do you lose track of time when you're in your studio?
I do, yeah, and that's kind of nice. I recently got a smartphone, which I don't like
very
much.
I'm sorry. I mean, congratulations, but I'm sorry.
So I'm trying to, like, force myself not to look at that, and so I hide it in the bottom of my bag and turn all the bells and whistles off, and then I do lose track of time, which is nice. It's always good.
So you're from Indiana, but you went away for a while. Tell me about away, and art school was away.
Yeah, I lived most of my adult life in the East Coast, and most recently the last 17 years in Philadelphia, where I went to the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts.
And what led you to go to art school?
I've always been interested in art, always had friends here who were artists and working artists, and at some point I tried several other things, and at one point I decided that, you know, hey, you know, I like to do this, I see other people doing it, you know, why can't I do it? And so I started taking classes, and then got accepted to the academy, and learned the nuts and bolts of how to paint.
Was art school what you expected it to be? Because it's kind of cool that you did other things for a little while first. You had a couple of gap years in there between, you know, your earlier life and then committing
right.
to art school.
Yeah.
Was it what you expected?
Yeah, I think it was mostly. You know, a lot of good instructors teaching you, and that's the way the academy is. It's a real nuts and bolts kind of a school. They teach you how to paint. They teach you how to mix color. They teach you, you know, those kinds of things, and that's what I really needed. I mean, I was an older student, so I already kind of knew or had a good idea what I wanted to paint. I didn't need anybody to tell me all that stuff. I just needed somebody to teach me.
They didn't. You didn't need them to tell you how to get inspiration. You needed
right,
them to tell you technique.
Right. I had plenty of inspiration and plenty of creativity. I just didn't know how to make it go where I wanted it to go, basically.
Oils, acrylics?
Oil, yeah. Oil paint.
Why?
And it's real plastic, real moldable. It doesn't dry very fast. You can scrape it off and go right back into it again. I like a medium that I can fix if I make a mistake. And acrylic just dries too fast for me. I just don't. It's hard to mix on a palette. It's dry before you're through using it, and so I've never played with that too much.
So you came back to Indiana kind of recently, about 3 years ago, is that
right? Yeah, it'll be 3 years in October, yeah.
And so that's a little bit of a challenge, too, because you had found your artistic community in Philadelphia, and now you're back in Indiana.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been back and forth a lot through the years, but you probably didn't realize till you moved back here full time how huge the art scene had gotten.
It's great. I mean, you've got a lot going on here. I mean, the Stutz is a wonderful place. There's nothing like that in Philadelphia. And then you have the Harrison on top of that, you know, and you know, both those places are really wonderful for, you know, fostering working artists. I mean, you have a lot of that in school. You have a lot of support in school. But then once you get out of school, everybody flies to the four corners, and it's hard to have that kind of camaraderie and that kind of support that you get in school. And Stutz and Harrison do that very well.
And so getting the residency, you already knew some of your who are now fellow artists at the Stutz, but...
yeah, that's correct.
Is it... Do you have times when you're in your studio and you hit a point where you're like, I'm a little blocked, I'm just going to wander down the hall and talk to a colleague, talk to somebody else who's painting or sculpting? And
it's a little harder than that, but I do have, you know, again, with the smartphone, I can text them and see if they're around and do that very... thing. A lot of people work a lot of odd hours. A lot of people have day jobs and they come in at night. I've always worked during the day. When I have light in a studio, it makes it better, and I've just gotten kind of in that habit. But yeah, no, there's definitely that kind of thing, and that's what makes being in a studio setting like that all the better.
Now, I know you can't speak for your fellow resident, Sean Hurley, about this, but how did you come up with the theme of Real Surreal for the show?
Well, they asked me to come up with a title, so I... So Sean's work is very ultra-realistic. He draws with charcoal, and he does printmaking, and it's all interiors. Recently, it's been interiors of the Stutz. It's an old auto factory, so there's lots of dark corners with pipes and things like that in the overhead. And it's very interesting work, and he's a consummate draftsman. And so that's the real part. And then my work is figurative and representational as well, but my work has sort of a fantastical bent to it. It's magic realist, and thus the surreal. Surreal tag.
Uh-huh. Nice yeah. Contrast. One of these things is not like the other.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we both, you know, paint and draw like, you know, real objects and whatnot. You know, we're both going at it in a different way.
I've noticed that you were kind enough to share some images from this exhibition with me, and I've noticed some common threads with some of your previous work that I've seen. If I opened up the John Klinkos glossary and looked under water, what kind of definition would I find? Water seems to, I'm going to make a bad pun, flow through a lot of your work. Sorry.
No, that's all right. No, water's very important. I have, you know, two main themes, water and aviation, flows through everything as well, and they seem to all deal with defying gravity, hopefully. And I did a lot of swimming growing up in Indianapolis, so a lot of times my work is sort of the water, the pool area is kind of a stage, and I arrange these characters on that stage, and things happen there. And then from a technical perspective, I like the figure in water and how light bends things and moves things around and changes the way the figure looks. And that's kind of an abstraction I can play with. So that's one of the reasons I like to do the water.
You can see new works by Stutz resident artist John Klinkos, as well as those of fellow Stutz resident Sean Hurley, beginning first Friday evening, August 4th, from 5 to 9. The exhibit is called Real Surreal, the work of Stutz residency artists Sean Hurley and John Klinkos. That night is also a Stutz Open Studio night. Learn more at stutzartists.com. That's S-T-U-T-Z artists.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Coming up, Yelp Indie's Floating Food and Drink Fest. Speaking of food and drink, today Eat Drink Indie's Jolene Ketzenberger talks with Stevie Stays Kirsch, Executive Director of Indianapolis City Market, about placemaking.
Stevie, tell me a little bit about what the market is doing right now.
Oh, goodness. We are really embracing, we're in transition, I would say. It's a transitional time for the market. The market has long been known as a food destination and, of course, a craft beer destination, which is great, and a retail destination. But we really are embarking in a new territory of being an all-inclusive, welcoming community center, if you will, that embraces multiculturalism, inclusiveness, and makes everybody from every walk of life feel comfortable that they have pride and ownership of this space.
Well, now you mentioned placemaking. Tell me about what you've been doing here at the market with placemaking.
Placemaking, you can think of it in terms of a place that accommodates and welcomes human interaction, sociability, but also is robust in its offerings to those audiences. So there are several things to do with, you could spend an entire day. There's several things to do within that place, whether you just want to hang out and relax, kind of check out for a while, maybe charge a cell phone, maybe grab a bite to eat, maybe talk to your neighbor. It provides a comfortable space for you to be able to do a lot of different things. Thanks to a grant that City Market received from Southwest Airlines in partnership with Big Car Collaborative and Project for Public Spaces in New York, we have been able to take areas of the market, including East Plaza, which has long been a concrete jungle, rather desolate, where nobody wanted to be because it was so inhospitable for people. And we've transformed it, and we're still in the process of transforming it, into a space that is pretty robust with activity. We have a new rain garden.
Now, this is on sort of on the corner of Alabama and Market.
That's correct. And we've been able to transform that, thanks to Williams Creek engineering firm, into this really beautiful meditative rain garden that is useful for people, and you can go and relax. We'll have performances in there. You can sit within it. We have umbrellas. In addition to that, we've built bocce courts for fun, ping pong tables, cornhole sets, music, all kinds of things for people to interact socially with people that they've never met before. And it's interesting because we've been so focused on the inside of the market, and I'm happy to report that we're 100% leased right now. We are now turning our sights to the mezzanine because that's kind of our next opportunity area within City Market. But the big challenge that the market has long had is that with all the hustle and bustle and vibrancy that happens inside of it, you could walk by it a million times a day and not get that sense because it's a beautiful brick fortress that doesn't have good vision points to the inside of the market. So you don't really get that sense. So you could walk by it and not really know what happens inside and not be compelled to come inside. So what we have to do is take that vibrancy, take that activity outside to the exterior parts of the market through placemaking and through events and programming, and both passive and active programming, meaning we'll host events that we do. In fact, we're hosting on July 28th, final Friday date night out on East Plaza, and there'll be tables and chairs. We'll have a DJ playing very Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra kind of music. There'll be from 7:15 to 8:15 a couple's yoga class that includes beer from Tomlinson Tap Room. The YMCA will stay open a little longer in case you want to change out of those yoga clothes into your date night clothes for dancing, bocce, ping pong, all those things. So it'll be a very fun event. It'll be kind of the start of our outdoor activations at nighttime. But I think people are starting to see that the City Market offers a lot more shopping destination than just, hey, I'm going to grab a quick bite. Linger, stay a while. It has a lot to offer you that you can, again, spend an entire day here. I could map out an itinerary for you from early morning. Let's say you work out at the Y at 5 a.m. and I can from that point on get you to 9 o'clock in the evening, and you will not leave City Market.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indie Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, I'll learn how Dance Kaleidoscope is giving equal time to the fellas. But right now, the Empire State Building, Yankee Stadium, the Pentagon, not buildings you'd typically associate with Indiana, but all three and thousands more come from the bedrock of the Hoosier State, limestone. The Indiana State Museum recently opened Stone Country then and now, and the exhibition features 30 original photographs by award-winning photographer Jeffrey Woolen, showcasing the limestone industry and revisiting and updating the images in the book Jeff and writer Scott Russell Sanders published in 1985. That book is called Stone Country. I invited Jeff and Mark Rushman, chief curator of fine art for the museum, to tell me why limestone inspires them. I want each of you gentlemen to tell me when you became aware that Indiana is the limestone nexus of the universe. Mark? Jeff?
Well, I moved to Bloomington, Indiana in 1980 to teach at Indiana University, and the movie Breaking Away had come out, which features a sort of fictional friction between the town and gown. The people on the campus and the people who live in Bloomington, especially the quarry and mill workers. And up until then, I had no clue about Indiana and Bloomington specifically's relationship with all this architectural history, the Empire State Building and the Flatiron Building and Metropolitan Museum of Art, all these wonderful, fabulous, iconic buildings had come from that little stone belt between Spencer and Bedford, with Bloomington sort of dab in the middle. So when I came as a photographer, my inclination is to wander around my environment and see what there is to see. And you don't have to go very far in Bloomington before you start running into these big, beautiful quarries and mills. So and then I began reading a little bit more about it and learned more about the very dynamic and important history of Indiana limestone out in the rest of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Mark, when did you become aware? Do you remember?
Well, probably just growing up in Indiana. You're surrounded by these limestone structures. You really don't associate it with southern Indiana or, for that matter, you know, a specific place. I was in Bloomington back in the 70s and, like Jeff, became aware of the quarries and you start hearing stories. You can drive down 37 and see these, you know, enormous holes in the ground with the equipment there. So your interest is piqued, but it really wasn't until, you know, more recently, certainly with my time with the State Museum, that I you know, gained a better understanding of Indiana limestone, the limestone industry, and what a tremendous impact that industry's had on not only Indiana but the rest of the world.
One of the things I like about the book Stone Country and your images is, not only does it tell the story of how this big old kind of roughly L-shaped treasure of limestone that we've pulled out of the ground, it has been exported literally all over the world, but also going back to early quarrying days, it's the story of human engineering triumphs. And a lot of your images capture the contrast between these giant blocks and the relatively tiny humans next to them.
Yeah, well, you know, even the cover shot really conveys that. If you block out the man standing on this giant pyramid of limestone block, quarry blocks, you'd think it's a stack of sugar cubes. But when you see him and you realize he must be, you know, about 6 feet tall, the massive scale of these things. So people have been quarrying limestone and marble and, you know, stones for thousands of years. The Romans, the Greeks, everybody, you know, builds every empire builds with this durable material to last forever. So, but nothing really changed that much. It was just raw manpower and a guy hitting a block of stone with a chisel for years and years and years. But of course, after the Industrial Revolution, things got made more efficient with machinery. First, it was steam-powered channelers and derricks and so on, and then and the quarries would be filled with smoke. And then into the 20th century, there was more with, you know, gasoline-powered and diesel-powered equipment. And when we first did the book, that was the state of the art. Now they're using computers and front loaders and everything. It's not as sexy in a way to go to a quarry, an active quarry, and see how they do what they do, or a mill. But they're still turning out this beautiful product using now this totally high-tech equipment.
Photographer Jeff Woolen and Indiana State Museum Chief Curator of Fine Art, Mark Rushman. You can see Stone Country then and now through September 10th. Leave it to Yelp Indy to come up with a new creative way to experience the food, drink, and the scenery of Indianapolis. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer is here to tell us about Yelp's latest and quite possibly most innovative event yet. Tell us everything.
I'll tell you what, Sharon. Their marketing diva, Brittany Smith, she may have outdone herself this time. I don't know, but she'll come up with something even bigger and better. But this one is pretty big and pretty spectacular. They're partnering with Downtown Indy, Inc. They're creating a one-of-a-kind way to experience the downtown canal and a lot of the businesses that are actually there along it. So I sat down with Brittany and also with Jacqueline Crowley of Downtown Indy to learn more about this event. It takes place on Sunday, August the 20th, and it's being called Cabrewing. It's a floating food and drink festival in the north end of the canal.
Attendees will actually get in inner tubes, float their way down the canal, and have food and drink experiences with live music, really getting to experience the canal in a way you usually can't.
How did you come up with this idea?
I try to think of anything that's really hard to execute. No, just looking at really great spaces that we have in the city and being great partners with Downtown Indy, trying to find ways to bring more attention to those spaces, bring them to life, and just remind people how lucky we are to have these spaces.
But people are actually going to be floating in rafts,
yes,
in the canal.
Yes. Thanks to Cityway, our partner, they're providing the inner tubes. Each attendee, 21 and over, will get to get in the inner tube, float their way down. They'll actually have a little paddle with them. For instance, Jack's Donuts will be handing them donuts, floating in the water, music in a boat. It's just going to be full experiences from start to finish.
Well, Jacqueline, I would think that the canal is the least likely place that the promoters of Downtown Indianapolis would like to see people actually floating. But you guys are going along with this because it is going to give a really great perspective. I'm just thinking about what all people are going to be able to see as they do float along the canal.
Yeah. And when Brittany comes to you with an idea, you say, absolutely. So she is so much fun. And this idea was something our team got so excited about. It's getting people in a way that we haven't seen them use the canal. So they're floating and passing some of our residential areas like Canal 9, who's participating in this, Canal Square Apartments. They're visiting some of the locations that really are on the canal and can activate that. The Indiana State Museum will be out there. So it's a great way to involve those partners and get them, you know, out there and having this experience with our residents, locals. So
it is an incredibly creative way. I mean, it's truly immersive. Let's definitely talk about that. But as far as promoting the city and letting people both who live here know about it and people who might be moving here, it really is a wonderful way to expose people to so many different elements that make up a downtown scene.
Yeah, truly. I actually remember walking down the canal one time with a friend from New York City, and she goes, you know, standing here, I think this is a city I would move to. While we were on the canal, it's just the view of the downtown, seeing people active, out walking, vibrant business scene. It's all right there on the canal.
Yeah. I mean, how often do you get to see that kind of urban, you know, green space somewhere and 3 miles of it? It's just iconic and beautiful. Yeah.
Well, obviously, when you're walking along there, you can. And you guys have done a great job, too, of having music and art and all that kind of stuff. So I guess it makes complete sense that we're going to get wet and get in the canal. So let's go back to this again here, Brittany. Yeah. Now, you're going to have two different sessions, and there's a limited amount of inner tubes.
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot of execution to have that many inner tubes. So, yeah, big thanks again to Cityway. So 1 to 3 p.m. is the first group, and then we'll have a second wave from 3 to 5 p.m. So you RSVP for the slot that you want to attend.
Wave, no pun intended.
Yeah,
there.
That's right. I know. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then the other element is that we're asking all attendees to make a $10 contribution. As you know, all Yelp events are free, but for this one, we really want to give back to to canal beautification. It costs a lot of money to keep up these spaces, and we want to make sure that we're giving back. And if people are having complimentary food and drink experiences, $10 is such an easy way to give back and have that experience.
Do they need to be able to swim?
We do have 30 lifeguards and security guards on hand for it. I would recommend that you be able to swim just for your own safety. You can touch the floor. I actually tested this all out a few weeks ago. It's 4 foot deep. It's a lot like swimming in a pond, which I grew up on a farm. So I'm like, you can get down with that. You're all Hoosiers. So, that's a good way to explain it.
Have you known of any other downtown organizations to do something like this, Jacqueline?
Not like this, and not with a hope of 2,000 people, too. So I think this day is going to be quite monumentous in Indy.
Reservations are a must for this. They're having two different sessions, but they are limited. They can only get so many of those inner tubes in the canal anyway. And they are having lifeguards and security, too. So it's a pretty big deal. Now, the reservations open on Monday, July the 24th. You have to do it online. You go to the Yelp website, yelp.com/events, and then look for Cub Brewing on the canal. It's going to be a wild afternoon.
We're going to break Instagram on that day, aren't we?
I think she totally will.
Well, I'm not sure any of our upcoming items take place on an inner tube on a canal, but we do have some other arts events to suggest to you on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
The Indianapolis Public Schools is teaming up with the Indiana Historical Society for, okay, if you're a child, cover your ears for a moment, a back-to-school festival. It's coming up on July 25th, and free admission to all guests and school fair, providing resources on topics ranging from after-school activities and mentoring to scholarships and tutoring, but fun and games for the kids as well. So good for you, but a lot of fun along the way.
A little bit of fun, a little bit of education at the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site. They are once again hosting their Candlelight Theater shows, and they have one yet here at the end of the month, or coming up at the beginning of October, but they've just released everything. There will be many of them coming up in October, December, April, and July of next year as well. But right now they're taking reservations already because these are pretty popular, and they sell out fairly quickly, and the first one is especially. It's the Victorian Villains. It's the perfect Halloween outing, and it's a patron favorite, so that's why we're telling you about this way in advance. It happens during the weekends in October. You go to presidentbenjaminharrison.org. You get to take part in the mystery tour and help solve the mystery. It's a lot of fun if you've never tried it. It's a great way to celebrate Halloween, and if you have, get online. Make your reservation now.
If you're a visual artist, or even if you aren't, you might have been touched by the late Wug Luku through the years, an outstanding visual artist who passed away at the end of June. There'll be a memorial service for him on August 10th at the Circle City Industrial Complex, but it's more than just remembering his life. It's to establish a fund through the Arts Council of Indianapolis that will be positioned as some sort of ongoing resource for artists. So check that out. You could learn more by going to Circle City Industrial Complex's or Arts Council's websites.
And a new exhibit is up at the Circle South Studio. That's up on Shelby Street, 1350 Shelby Street, up in the Fountain Square area. It's Portal by Bill Bass, and it just opened at the beginning of July. It will run through the end of the month, and he is a Bloomington-based digital artist. It's his solo exhibition of some new installations, some prints, and some sculptures. He's got a really keen eye on the world, and this is a really fun little show to see. So it's at the Circle South Studios up there in Fountain Square.
If you are looking to do something that you could vaguely brag about as being athletic, you might want to consider the mini golf, artist mini golf at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, and pay particular attention to the hole that has kind of a Zen quality to it. It has a very Japanese meditative quality, but it's the hardest hole out there, so I think they're kind of messing with our heads. You can do that just through the summer, so if you haven't gone out there yet, you better put that on your calendar soon.
If you need something else to do, you can go to the indiearts.org/guide. It's the local arts events guide presented by the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Or join us again next week when we go through our calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Still to come, Butler's Dive Dapper Poetry Carnival. But first, David Hochoy is having fun with Dance Kaleidoscope this August. First up, Piaf Plus will transport you to France with dance pieces that celebrate the music of Jacques Brel and Edith Piaf. Later in the month, DK's Fringe Festival concert, Divos, celebrates the company's favorite male singers. I invited their longtime artistic director, David Hochoy, to talk about his inspirations. Let's talk about the little sparrow and her inspiration to you as a choreographer and to the company.
Hi. Edith Piaf, you know, has always been one of my idols, and she has a wonderful kind of grittiness in her voice, and her songs are particularly poignant and emotional to me. And actually, I first used her in a piece I did a long time ago called Au Moulin Rouge, about the life of Toulouse-Lautrec. But then I decided that I really wanted to do a piece that just was all about her and celebrated her life. So this is when I decided to do Piaf Celebration, and it's in two parts. The first part is the kind of Parisian gritty street scenes, and then the dancers all transform themselves into these beautiful, elegant creatures in long evening gowns and tails for the men, and then they do these beautiful waltzes and La Vie en Rose. Because I think that's part of her too, is that her appeal is that she's so romantic, you know.
Yeah, yeah. She strikes you as someone you just kind of want to give her a hug and say, you know, you will find love someday.
That's right.
Transporting back to her life. Yeah, yeah. And there's a little Jacques Brel inspiration as well.
Yes, and so that's the second part of the program. The first part of the program is a piece based on the Jacques Brel songs. And actually, I use the music from a musical called Jacques Brel Is Alive and Well and Living in Paris, which was really big in the 60s. It has some incredible songs. They've all been translated into English. And I chose, you know, particular songs that I could use. And it's a wonderful companion piece because the first part is all in English and then the second part is all in French.
And he had that grittiness in his voice as well. He's kind of a male version,
and all those
songs about yearning.
Yes, as his most famous song is "Ne me quitte pas," which means "Don't leave me."
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's just heartbreaking.
I know. I remember when I was a student in McGill in Montreal, and I went over to this French Canadian man's house, and he was playing Charles Aznavour, singing Jacques Brel songs. I was just like, "Oh my God, who is this person?" And you know, why are these songs so poignant and beautiful?
You were smitten already.
I know.
Yeah, good for you. And then for something a little bit different, you're doing something that's part of the Fringe Fest with Divos to celebrate men.
That's right.
Tell me about that.
Last year we did Divas. To celebrate the women divas. Every year, the past 5 years, I've asked the dancers to choreograph their own pieces. And it's really terrific. Audiences love getting a glimpse into their artistic lives. And they get a wonderful chance to see what it's like on the other end of it, to manage, you know, dancers and costumes and all that stuff.
How many of them come up to you and kind of whisper, "I don't ever want to do that again. God
Never,
love you
actually,
for doing
they
it."
They all love it.
Okay.
And last year we had 9 of them choreograph. And so they all picked their favorite divas and, you know, Barbara Streisand and Patti LaBelle. And this year, because of its success, I decided that we should definitely have the male version because there are male divas, right?
Of course.
We all know one or two.
I'm shocked at this revelation, David Hochoy.
Yes, we all know one or two divas of our own. So they love the fact that, yes, they are picking their favorite male divas this year. And it should be really, really exciting.
Can you give us a sneak peek of any?
I think somebody said to me yesterday they were doing Rod Stewart's.
Ooh, Maggie May.
Yeah.
All right, fun.
Somebody is doing Julio Iglesias.
Ah.
Because they wanted a Spanish-speaking person.
Uh-huh.
Later on in the season, I'm going to be doing Elton John. And our guest choreographer, Nick Owens, is going to be doing Prince. So,
wow.
And we'll put those all together in March.
That's stunning.
On the IR team main stage.
How fun.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
David Hochoy. See his company Dance Kaleidoscope's Piaf Plus, August 5th and 6th at the Tarkington Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts. And you can see Devos, the Man, at the Indie Fringe Festival various days and times from August 17th through the 26th. Get all the details at dancekal.org. That's dancekal.org. If you love words, you need to know Kaveh Akbar. At age 28, Kaveh is already the recipient of major poetry prizes, and his work has appeared in outlets from The New Yorker to the PBS NewsHour. He was born in Tehran, received an MFA from Butler University, and he's a visiting professor of poetry in the Purdue University MFA program. Kaveh and Butler University MFA fiction professor Dan Barden came by to talk about the Dive Dapper Poetry Carnival coming up on August 12th at the Ephraimson Center for Creative Writing on the Butler campus. But we started our conversation with the power of words. Free association. Respond to this. Poetry is dangerous.
Absolutely correct.
Dan, agree?
I'll go with my friend, yeah. Just the most trouble that you can cause with words.
I think that poetry is sort of a vastly potent political weapon, like political tool. I think that it's incredibly democratic in that you don't need anything to write it except for a mind capable of forming language. You know, it's optimal if you have maybe a pen and paper, but you don't even need that. You know, Nazim Hikmet wrote poems in jail without having even that, you know. So I think it's vastly potent as a political tool. Very dangerous.
Is that what drew you to it?
It's political utility? No, I think that what drew me to it was just that I was fascinated by it. I remember I opened up a journal of a small press journal of poetry, and the second poem I read, it was like the clouds parted and an angel appeared and blew his trumpet, and it was just like this total shock of clarity that this is what I was. This is what I was going to do with my life.
How old were you?
17.
Wow.
maybe even 16. It was middle of high school. I had a seminal English teacher, as many poets will tell you they had, and he sent me home with a stack of poetry books and poetry magazines, and I remember it was just this total shock of clarity, like, why had anyone been wasting my time with anything else?
But thank goodness you found it then.
Thank goodness I found it then, yeah, and I've never really doubted that clarity. You know, I've certainly deviated from that path. You know, I've certainly gotten distracted, but in terms of it being the fundamental thing that I wanted to do with my days, that's always been perfectly clear to me.
Dan, how did the relationship between you guys happen and the placing of the Poetry Carnival at Butler?
Well, Kaveh was my student, like, what,
Four
or 5 years ago, and we had a lot of, you know, enthusiasms in common, but as you've heard, his great enthusiasm is poetry. And as his career developed, and particularly his website, Dive Dapper, got huge, blew up, I was looking for ways that I could exploit our friendship. You
know? And so I thought, love how honest you guys are being. This is awesome.
So I said, you know what? So Kaveh and I started talking about it and says, what could we do? And Kaveh said, you know, I'd like to have a celebration dedicated to poetry. And then we stumbled upon this word carnival, and we thought, you know, we really want to have a day-long event that celebrates poetry the way that Kaveh celebrates poetry as this thing that's fun. I mean, one of the things that I always come back to is that the great poet Frank O'Hara said, if poetry is not better than the movies, you should go to the movies,
mm-hmm.
you know? And Kaveh never, you know, he's always a proponent of poetry that's the funnest, best experience that you can possibly have.
Yeah.
And this provides kind of a object
correlation, a tangible way to do the amazing things that you do with your website, which is providing free accessibility to the magic of language.
Yeah, absolutely. I think any sort of portal into the delight of poetry is valuable. I think that it completely changed my life. It's changed the life of hundreds of people that I know. Once they were able to sort of access poetry in a way that didn't feel academic and didn't feel starchy, and that allowed them to truly celebrate. We mean it when we say celebrate, because poetry is all about building architecture to house your wonder. You know what I mean? Every poet writes about wonder fundamentally, whether it's wonder at love, wonder at death, wonder at the spectrum of human experience, human emotional experience, human psychic experience. You're ultimately wondering about these things. And it's about building these little houses in which to put your wonder, you know? And I think that allowing people access to that, allowing people the ability to explore their wonder through language and allowing them exchanges with language that will fill them with delight and wonder. I mean, what could be better than that in the world? I'm getting goosebumps, if you can see, talking about this. I guess the listeners won't be able to see that, but you guys can verify that for them.
We can indeed. Yeah. Building those houses and flinging the doors open, not locking the doors.
Absolutely.
Inviting everybody in
and throwing a party for them.
And the party is going to have, I understand, people with perfect hair serving corn dogs or something like that. just if you need any more inspiration than what you've just heard. Tell me about the poets who are featured this year.
Yeah, so we're featuring three poets this year. Adrian Matika is based in Bloomington. He's an incredible poet, a National Book Award finalist, Pulitzer finalist, just a brilliant, brilliant poet, an amazing teacher, engaging poet. Wendy Hsu is a young poet. She's based in Brooklyn. She's an incredible poet. She came up studying under James Tate at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Just an incredible, strange, brilliant, wonderful poet, literally full of wonder, her poetry is. And Francine J. Harris, who is in St. Louis. She just won the Lambda Literary Award, the Lord Award, for her newest book, which is incredible. It's essential reading. It's one of the best books that was published in 2016 by anybody in any medium, in any genre. She's just an incredible teacher. All three of them are just incredible teachers, incredible ambassadors for poetry, incredible community members in their various and sundry communities, just like really, really, really good people to be around. And then we have a bunch of special secret guests who will also be coming
in.
Yeah. A bunch of really, really phenomenal poets who are coming in to hang out with us and just help us celebrate. Eat some corn dogs, paint some faces.
Let's go back to books for a second, because you have one about to come out?
Yeah, I do. I have a book coming out with Alice James. It'll be out in September. It's called Calling a Wolf a Wolf. It will be published September 12th. There was just a little excerpt from it in The New Yorker.
Congratulations. That's
thank you very much.
You couldn't ask for better publicity.
No. It was a very, very cool opportunity. It was a very incredible opportunity. I'm very, very excited about it. You know, it's a debut book, so it's uncharted water for me, but I'm very, very excited. I'm like 80% excited, 20% nervous.
I think that's probably the right ratio.
Yeah. Well, and it's just sort of been in the pipes for so long that I'm eager to, finally put it in people's hands.
Yeah, it's your baby.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'd be remiss if I didn't answer the question that has to be going through a lot of our people eavesdropping on our conversations minds, which is, tell me about the bird that Dive Dapper is inspired by.
Yeah, so Dive Dapper, it's sort of a duckish waterfowl. Shakespeare alludes to it in his poem Venus and Adonis, and it's housed in this line that has this really wonderful pun. If you Google it, you'll find it. And it's just my dad had a duck farm my whole experience growing up. I'm 28 years old, and he had a huge, giant sort of industrial duck farm for 25 years. And just sort of like work farmer's hours, keeping up this duck farm. So it's sort of a way to participate in that lineage, I guess, keep that as part of, ducks were sort of my nourishment growing up, literally, and they supported our family. And so now they're sort of my intellectual nourishment in a way, you know. Aww. It sort of feeds me in that way. And it's also just a nice sounding word, right? Dive Dapper. It just sort of has a good mouthfeel.
Yeah,
right? It's elegant. And like the URL was available.
And there's that whole pragmatic aspect.
Sure.
Tell me a line you're struggling with right now from something you're writing.
A line I'm struggling with right now from something I'm writing. That took me a little bit off guard.
Or maybe you don't.
No, sure. I mean, I'm always working on lines. I'm trying to work with this idea of a name smearing away, but the verb doesn't quite feel right. Like a name smearing off a map, mm-hmm. you know, if like, which is not to say like a country smearing off a map, but just like the way that we forget language, the way that things are forgotten, but like just like the taxonomical effects of that, the way that names can like just be forgotten, and then like what that means about us forgetting a culture or forgetting a group of people.
Kava Akbar and Dan Barden invite you to hear live music, enjoy fair food, and play carnival games conducted by beautiful people with perfect hair. But most of all, they invite you to immerse yourself in poetry at the Dive Dapper Poetry Carnival on August 12th at the Ephraimson Center for Creative Writing on the Butler campus. Poet headliners include Francine J. Harris, Adrian Mateka, and Wendy Hsu. Learn more about Kava Akbar at kavehakbar.com, kavaakbar.com, and check out his portal for poetic voices at divedapper.com. And please note, you don't have to be a writer to attend the Dive Dapper Carnival. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. I'm here today with Joel and Nick Tucker of the Tucker Brothers. They have an amazing new album out called Writing Prompts. You can go to the release party for Writing Prompts at the Jazz Kitchen on Saturday, July 29th, or you can find the album online at Amazon, iTunes, and all your favorite digital music platforms. Joel and Nick, thank you for sharing five songs with us today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for inviting us.
You guys are brothers, and you're doing this segment together as brothers, splitting the picks in half. Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right, Joel.
So my first pick would be Idle Moments off of a Grant Green record. The way that he played was so him, you know? He like, had, like, a bunch of things that he would play, but he would always... I mean, the way... just as, it was the way that he played them, and the way that he kind of just went all, like, all in, all the time. Fearless. It was sort of a fearless way of playing.
For us?
Yeah, I think maybe from Oscar Peterson Trio, we get requests. This is Days of Wine and Roses. It's an old jazz
Henry Mancini tune, right?
Yeah. It's an old Henry Mancini tune, but jazz musicians have been playing it for years. And this is actually the very first bass line I transcribed. Maybe in eighth grade or something. I transcribed Ray Brown's walking bass line on this. So
awesome.
A very important tune for me.
Joel, you have a tune for us?
Yeah. How about I Hear a Rhapsody by Jim Hall, the Jim Hall Trio's Alive record. And I remember hearing this record in college, and the way that they played these standards, I hadn't heard anything like it before. And now that I've listened to a bunch of Jim Hall, it's just like a very quintessential Jim Hall album to have is this live record. And it got me inspired to start playing in a trio setting, because I'd always played in like a big band setting or with a piano player. And it made me realize, like, hey, the guitar can be a really cool trio instrument and play chords and melodies at, you know, the same time.
Nick, back to you. You have a tune, another tune.
Yeah, sure.
Up for us.
This is actually from a brand new album by Christian Scott. The album is called Diaspora, and I think maybe just the first song on that record is called Diaspora. And he's a young trumpet player that's really doing a lot to push jazz music forward. And so I think, you know, getting his name out there a little bit so more people can hear him would be
great,
a good
record.
Thing.
Yeah.
Good pick.
Thanks.
We're here with Joel and Nick Tucker, and they have a final pick for us today, and this is a joint pick, right?
Yeah, yes. We picked this one together.
This is Crooked Creek by
Brian Blade and the Fellowship Band.
This is a tune that, you know, when we first put our band together, we learned this as a group and started playing it, and we definitely have drawn some inspiration from this band. It's like Brian Blade is a phenomenal drummer. He plays with Wayne Shorter, but he's got all of his own projects as well. And this is a song that kind of like really embodies a lot of his spirit as a composer and performer.
And Joel and Nick, your new album, the new Tucker Brothers album, is called Writing Prompts, and it's inspired by the history of Indianapolis jazz, right?
Yes.
You want to give us a quick thumbnail sketch of Writing Prompts?
Definitely. So Writing Prompts is an album our second album that we've made with the Tucker Brothers group in the addition of Evan Main on piano for this record. So it's a quintet instead of a quartet. We wrote all the music with previous Indianapolis jazz musicians in mind, and this is sort of our dedication to them, and moving the music in a forward direction rather than just staying back in the past.
And the Writing Prompts release party is happening Saturday, July 29th at the Jazz Kitchen with a performance from the Tucker Brothers, and you can find the album online at Amazon, iTunes, Bandcamp, and all the other typical places, right?
Yeah, on July 29th.
On July 29th.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joel and Nick.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Jill Dittmeyer. Hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or join us Thursday nights at 8. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, a sneak peek at a highlight of the Indiana State Fair, a festival devoted to boogie-woogie piano, and some mad scientists stage an art exhibit. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All of that and much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.